Hashtag embrace the grind. We work for the fans. We work for the 71 Division I teams. Hashtag don't quit.
Inside Lacrosse Fall Podcast rolls on with Duke head coach John Donowski, who is also in charge of Team USA. Coach, I got to tell you, my fall so far, from a football standpoint, I've gotten to interact in Sydney, Australia with David Shaw. I've been to Alabama, watched them practice on Thursday, met with Nick Saban. I've been out at Washington State hanging out with Mike Leach. I asked him about mermaids, if he thought they were real or not. He said in all his reading about pirates, he doesn't think mermaids exist. And then last week, Jim Mora Jr. of UCLA, whose son Ryder is at Maryland playing lacrosse. So it's been fantastic. How have you been?
I wish I was you.
I don't know about that. How about Duke beating Carolina?
Yeah, Coach Cutt has done a masterful job here. He's just, if you watch his career and where they began and where they're at now, setting up a really meaningful game Friday night at home versus the U.
He has done a remarkable job. I remember last spring you guys telling me that this young quarterback is going to be a big-time player. Coming up October 7th and 8th, Team USA will be in Baltimore and Sparks, playing against Maryland and then Towson. Coach, how many guys right now are still in the running to play for Team USA in Israel next summer? And how's that process going?
Well, I'll tell you what, U.S. lacrosse is that we're very grateful. They've kind of, you know, changed the format. When I interviewed with Tony Lecco, who was, in charge of the committee at that point, we basically said, listen, we don't want to coach an all-star team. We want to create a standing 46-man roster. And basically, you know, that's how we're evolving. We did a couple of things. First, you know, the first event, you know, in January of 16, we were just kind of given like 10 guys, and we added another 13, and we had 23. And then we've kind of evolved to this point where we've had a really good foundation of 10 to 12 players that will travel. But at this point, what we're considering is that all 46 guys are on the team, that this is the team. And the hope is twofold. The hope is, number one, that everybody feels great about their role on the team at this point. Only 23, or 25 with two alternates get to travel. But we're hoping that the younger guys who don't maybe get to travel, that when it's their turn next time, they will become the mentors, the role models for the younger guys. And it'll be like running a program instead of being part of an all-star team that gets together once every 4 years.
What's your mindset, Coach? Do you have a vision of what you want the 25 to be? And are you plugging guys in, or are you just letting this organically grow? How do you get to where you want to be?
Yeah, no, I think our vision, I think first you have to consider the tournament itself. You know, the international rules are so unlike anything that's played in anyone's career. So it's unlike high school, it's unlike college, and it's unlike the MLL. So not that you're throwing out those experiences for the players, but you have to kind of temper your enthusiasm when somebody has success in those things, because it's really going to be about team chemistry. The other thing is, and the second piece of that is, so the rules are different. Now, if you get to the gold medal game, you're playing 6 games in 9 days with a 23-man roster. So if you get together once every couple of months and you run full field, transition drills, that can look great. But that's not how the game is going to be played, probably. You know, it's going to be won or lost in the box. And so chemistry is the third piece, right? So you got to find the guys who can play together and play the right way together. Then the next piece you're looking at, the fourth piece is what I would consider is athleticism, flexibility. Well, you might keep 5 attackmen on the roster. Not maybe, but attackmen's number 4 and 5 have got to be able to play midfield for you, because it's going to be hot. And if you only have five offensive midfielders, you can't expect five guys to carry the load every game, six games in 9 days. And the same thing to be said for middies. They got to be able to play a little bit of short stick defense when the time calls for it. And then you would say the same thing about your poles. They may have to play down low. And you're not even considering an injury factor yet. You know, if somebody were to get hurt during the tournament, and then do you have a close defenseman that could move up and play pole? So, you know, with all those things being considered, you know, we're trying to build on versatility. We're trying to build on team concept, chemistry, and of course, always a high lacrosse IQ.
Coach, I love that photo you posted on Facebook of the Long Island Lacrosse Club. I believe it was 1977. The diversity in that photo stood out, the characters. Your era was different from mine, and this current era is even, you know, I call them the selfie generation. What's it like now dealing with kids who they train, they play a lot harder than we ever did. They put more into this than we ever did, but their expectations are different as well. What's it like dealing with this current crop of stars?
I can say this, that I have been blown away by the attitude to be coached. You know, I think one of the first things that we said as a coach, or I said as a, to our coaching staff before the first event down at the IMG Academy, we want guys to go home saying, this was great. You want to be part of this. But we told them, you know, we're going to coach you a little bit, you know, that you're really, like you said, you know, you're really good, but you know, we need to give you a little bit of structure. We need to give you a little bit of discipline so that we can play together. And then, so this way you'll get freedom, you know, you'll get all that freedom from that, but we have to know what each other's doing, and we can't rely on any one person. Because one person can have a bad day. One person can get shut off. Now, one person, this is going to be about, we're going to win as a team, we're going to lose as a team, but we're going to try to build it with that. And the guys have been very, very receptive to that.
Being around excellence is always stimulating, Coach, regardless of what field, what sport. What trait of excellence have you identified and maybe tried to carry over into your fall practices at Duke?
You know, the competitiveness, you know, that you know, we in September we had a over Labor Day weekend, you know, we spent some time together with the team and on a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And so Friday night was going to be a, quote, walkthrough. You know, no pads. Guys haven't picked up the stick in, you know, maybe 2 or 3 weeks or played competitively for a month. And so let's walk through. Guys played so hard. You know, we were doing, just transition up and down, 4-on-3s, 5-on-4s. Skeleton, no for anything. And it was incredible how hard they played, which shows, you know, how much they care. And it's just, you know, that's something, you know, we call it bleeding through, how your behavior bleeds through from practice to games, so on. And I think that the game, you know, during that event, the blue team, which was the older guys, out of 16 goals they scored, they probably had 12 dunks because of the ball movement and the unselfishness. So it was really neat just to watch their competitiveness.
That's amazing you mentioned that, Coach, because I distinctly remember my first practice as an indoor defender for the Baltimore Thunder, practicing alongside guys like Gary Gade and Brian Reese and Paul Cantabene. I was amazed just in a routine drill how competitive and how hard guys were going. I mean, Kip Foulkes nearly took my head off, and I thought we were going half speed. It was a transition for me as a goalie to defense in the first place. But I'm like, you know what? You don't make it this far if you don't, A, love practice, and B, learn how to compete in the small little drills.
There's, you know, I think, again, if you were to kind of, you know, outline what it is that you're looking for, first of all, we're looking for athleticism, right? We're all looking for speed and quickness and explosiveness and so on. But that second piece would be that competitiveness and really skills, because they're all skilled. You know, all the guys at this level have skills. Skills are really third. You know, I mean, it's as crazy as that sounds, because that's something that's a given. But it's, you know, there's athleticism that's going to set some guys apart. There's that competitiveness that you must have. You know, and there's going to be a you know, a Wednesday game, and it might be 80 degrees, and it might be the fourth game in 4 days. And, you know, there is no, you know, there is no, you know, looking back and saying, you know, I think I'll sit this one out, or I think I'll, you know, I won't go as hard. You know, you have no choice because, you know, the tournament is over in a blink of an eye.
Team USA is in action October 7th. That's a Saturday against Maryland. They'll come back on Sunday, and I hope to be there on the 8th, Coach, against Towson. Also that day, Israel will be scrimmaging the Tigers. That's at U.S. Lacrosse, their wonderful facility now up in Sparks, a beautiful field and training center. Coach, I really appreciate your time. Always good to hear your voice. Best to Coach Ned Crotty and your son, and hope to see you down the road here this fall.
Hey, Quinn, thank you so much for the opportunity. And I'll just say this, I'll finish this, that these guys, there's so many more guys than the 23, you know, that are deserving to make this team. And I think that really speaks well of our sport, and it really speaks well of the character. I've been so impressed with the character of the guys through the whole process that the sport, you know, our sport is just it's a wonderful collection of young men, and the sport's got a great future.
Thanks, Coach. Inside Lacrosse Fall Podcast rolls on. We bring in NLL Commissioner Nick Sakavich. It has been quite a month or two of news in terms of the indoor league, a level of excitement that I haven't seen since the old days of the Philadelphia Wings and the Buffalo Bandits and when the Toronto Rock moved to Maple Leaf Garden back in the 90s. Nick Sakavich, first of all, congratulations on what you guys have done in the last month or so. I want to start with San Diego. What is most significant about having a new franchise in San Diego?
Well, thanks. Thanks a lot, Quinn, for those kind words, and really appreciate being on here. San Diego, well, both of these announcements that we made really define themselves by the ownership. And the key, I learned this in the league I came from, the key to any league success, both short and long term, is the ownership quality. And we could not have picked a better first team to launch in San Diego with a better owner. Joe Tsai is so deeply committed to the sport of lacrosse. You know, he's an avid fan, former player at Yale University, and played a game in high school, and is just deeply passionate about the sport. But he's also a very successful businessman and a strategic thinker, understands the big picture, and has the depth of resources to be able to make a great city like San Diego a successful NLL franchise. And the same goes for Philadelphia. So it's really the unique aspect is really the ownership quality, and that we were able to get this quality of owner into the NLL, which speaks to where we're going with our league.
Philadelphia being added to the mix, I think, is a tremendous plus. You know, one of my first experiences working for ESPN2 was back in the 1992 season and being sent to the Spectrum to cover the Philadelphia Wings. And as funny as it sounds, I had heard a great deal about it. I had never witnessed it in person. Those games back in the early 90s in that Philadelphia Spectrum were unbelievable spectacles played in front of 15,000 screaming fans. And now that is back, I cannot tell you, Nick, how excited I am. What was the biggest challenge you faced in getting that franchise relaunched?
Well, we still have those environments throughout our league, and it was really sad that the Wings, were acquired by a great owner and the Mohegan Sun Tribe, and who acquired 50% of the team. But it was kind of sad that it had to leave Philadelphia. Philadelphia is such a great sports market. I know from personal experience, you know, the fans here are some of the best in the world that support their teams. And you know, the hurdle, I think the biggest hurdle was the ownership that the Comcast Spectacor Group and the senior management there needed to believe in the plan. And, you know, I think it's fairly well known that, you know, I spent my first 6 months here at the NLL building the plan and hiring the right senior staff and the team that is now executing on the plan. And you know, the hurdle was getting comfortable with that. And Dave Scott, who's the president and CEO of Comcast Spectacors, a great friend and someone I've known and done a lot of business with in my soccer days, he believed in our plan, and he saw the same vision that we're seeing for the growth of the league and the growth of the sport. And once he got comfortable with that, he said, all right, let's do this, because the NLL belongs back in Philadelphia.
Tremendous, tremendous news for folks in the region. Draft recently, what was your biggest takeaway for the entry draft and some of the young talent that you hope can become stars in the league?
Yeah, it's, you know, we were back up in Toronto again this year, doing it again, and it was a wonderful draft, and it just ceases to amaze me every time these guys come up to accept their hat and take a picture with me, which, by the way, is one of the best things about my job. I have a lot of good things about my job, but that clearly, because I'm a former player, not lacrosse player, but former professional player, and there's nothing better than going up and knowing that a team wants you and has drafted you. So just the looks on their faces. And then, you know, this is going to sound odd, but when I hug them, it's like hugging steel. And it's amazing how fit these guys are and how big they are. And they're just excited to be in the league. You know, all our GMs and our coaches tell me about the talent quality, that it just continues to rise every year. And, you know, we see that on our floor. Really exciting that we've got more Americans in our draft than ever before. And I think that's an indication of the indoor game growing rapidly in the United States. We had more Americans at our combine. We had more Americans eligible for the draft. And we had a number of them drafted into our league this year, which is great, great to see. No disrespect to the Canadians, but it's great to see the talent coming out of the U.S. because we're going to need more players. We're going to have more teams. We're going to need to fill more roster spots. And it's great to see players coming from south of the border. So that was a nice surprise as well. Not a surprise, but it was nice to see. And next year we have two drafts. We have an entry draft and we have an expansion draft for the first time in many years, with at least two teams in that expansion draft. Possibly a third.
The product is off the charts, incredible. For as much as I liked and was successful at field lacrosse, you know, having played indoors, it was, you know, I don't want to say lacrosse on steroids, it's got a bad connotation, but it was lacrosse on caffeine, let's just put it that way. The action, the hitting, yeah. The scoring, and I think more and more American fans now are watching and loving it. How can this season, in terms of broadcast and getting eyes on your games and getting you know, folks to watch, NLL.TV is their main avenue?
Well, NLLTV.com is, NLLTV, which we launched last year, you know, can be viewed on the internet, can be viewed on Apple, Roku, your iPhone, Android, iOS, pretty much multi-channel, multi-platform access to NLTV. We have free content, highlight content. We have our show that we started last year called The Box. It's a weekly show. We've got new talent coming. And the best news about NLTV, and I want to make sure we get this out there, is we're putting significant resources and dollars against production quality. So we're upping our game in production. We heard the fans loud and clear last year, and last year was kind of a beta test. We really weren't sure what we were going to get with NLTV, but we got huge viewership. Our Twitter game of the week averaged about almost 400,000 views per game on that free-to-air Twitter game of the week. And, you know, our Western and Eastern Conference finals, we almost had 1 million people. But we got some criticism on production quality and delivering a better quality TV experience. So this going into this year, our ownership has approved significant resources to upgrade that production quality and deliver a better product. We have more sponsors joining us this year to deliver a better product, a better viewing experience for the fan. And we're excited about that. We really think NLTV is just scratching the surface to be able to unlock the great game of lacrosse to a bigger audience.
Yeah, the visuals are amazing between the goal scoring, the precision, the hitting, the speed, the emotion, the crowd. There's a lot of potential there. Nick, final thing, if I'm a fan in one of these cities and want to go to games, what's my best way? Log on to the league website, the team website. What's best way to encourage people or to get people to buy tickets?
Well, the best way is to log on to the league website, which has each of our teams that you can click onto, including Philly and San Diego, although they won't be playing this year. You can link up with those franchises in each of those cities just by going to NLL.com. It's a brand new website, by the way, and it's video centered. So there's tons of video, tons of highlights on NLL.com, and you can access each of our teams right from there as well. And we're super excited. We feel like, you know, we are going to be a 20 to 30 team league in the next decade to 15 years. And we're excited about the growth of the game throughout the continent and internationally, frankly. So it's a good time to be in professional lacrosse.
Nick, continued success, and I echo your statement there. There's a level of excitement about this league, and you keep it moving in the right direction because it is super for the sport, and the players and the fans. So thank you for your time today and continued success.
Well, thank you, and it's teamwork. It's not just me. It's a whole team of people behind me and the industry and folks like you and Inside Lacrosse and the collegiate programs. It takes a lot of people to move mountains, and it's teamwork. So I just appreciate and I'm honored to be working with everybody.
Keep it rolling. Thank you. The Inside Lacrosse Fall Podcast continues. We welcome in MLL Commissioner Dave Gross, live from the Boston area. Dave, right now, I guess it's fair to call you outgoing commissioner after almost a dozen years at the helm. Major League Lacrosse is looking at a new commissioner. Can you give us an update in terms of the time frame in the transfer of power?
Sure. You know, we're actively interviewing candidates right now for the commissioner role. Hope to have somebody in place, taking the reins early November, knock on wood.
What's your role going to be, Dave? You're going to stay involved, I assume, with Lacrosse Sportsnet, Black Sportsnet?
Yeah, I'll stay involved with the network in that role there, and excited to be part of that. And excited to have a new commissioner come in after a little over 14 years of doing it. They have some new blood. I think it's very good for the league, and I think it'll be great for everybody involved.
What do you think was the most significant upside of a 2017 season that saw the Ohio Machine win the championship in Frisco, Texas?
You know, Quint, I think the quality of play on the field just continues to get better and better. And each year I don't think it can get better. But these guys, top to bottom on each roster, are just so incredibly talented. The level of play is at an all-time high. I also think, the championship game in Frisco was very well received. What an amazing venue. People had a great time there. And I think that's something for us to build on in the future.
Yeah, I would echo that sentiment on both those points. The Star, we televised a Georgetown Notre Dame men's game and a Stanford Duke women's game there. That place is unbelievable. Just a perfect size indoors. And then going back to the quality of play, having called a bunch of Ohio Machine games, I would put their offense, Dave, historically as one of the top five that I have seen in the history of the league dating back to 2001. I mean, I'd put them maybe in a second, third, or fourth place behind some of those Bayhawk or Long Island teams of yesteryear.
Well, it's funny, you know, you look at the start of the year and no Steel Stanwyck for them. You know, Logan Shush really couldn't make the commitment either. And those are two incredible offensive weapons. And they have one of the best offensive years of all time. You know, they pick up Canizero in the draft, who became a perfect fit for that offense. And, you know, between Schreiber and Baum and Holman and Harrison. Yeah, there's just a lot of firepower. And then Cockerton, who gets no credit, who should get a lot more, just tremendous firepower in that offense.
This offseason, Dave, has already seen a lot of newsworthy issues or topics. You know, Brian Reese, no longer the head coach for the Chesapeake Bay Hawks. Boston has made some moves to their front office, Denver as well. Why do you think that this offseason seems to have more turnover and more change than years past?
Well, I think, you know, each organization's got different reasons for that, Quint. I think the first piece, when you take a look at Chesapeake, you know, their objective is to have a full-time head coach for the team, somebody who can be out in the community as they try and get their new, you know, facility built. And Brian has too many other commitments for that to work. So I don't think they were looking to make a change. It just didn't fit, unfortunately, for their needs and Brian's needs. You know, in Boston, I think, you know, Kevin was with the team for quite a number of years, and Ted was with the Outlaws for a number of years. And I think both those guys just, you know, felt it was time to try something new. I think it happens. This is you know, Major League Lacrosse, it's a difficult business, a very competitive business. And I think, you know, you need to recharge the batteries every once in a while.
Player movement underway, team movement, always a question, and expansion. You know, will Rochester stay? Is Dallas viable? What's the story in Atlanta with their ownership group? What can you tell us about a team, potential team movement and or expansion?
Well, until things are done, it's always hard to throw anything out, Quint, because then you look like a fool who said something that didn't materialize. And we've had a lot of things over the past years where we thought, you know, either we'd be expanding into a market or a team might relocate, and then for some reason or another, it doesn't happen. We make no bones about it. We want to be in Dallas. We think that the greater Dallas area can be a tremendous market for Major League Lacrosse. So it's not a question of if, it's just when will we pull the trigger on that, whether it's an expansion team or a team that's relocating. We're not sure quite yet. You know, our objective is always to keep teams in their cities so we can have the right ownership group, you know, involved in those markets. So that's our first thing that we'll exhaust all options for. And if we can't, then we'll consider if we need to relocate a team.
Dave, as you hand things over, you know, you've given this blood, sweat, and tears for, as you said, about 14 years. What's one area that you're most proud of, and what's one area that you think has to be addressed immediately by the new commissioner? You know, what's an area of strength, and maybe what's an area of not weakness, but an area that needs immediate attention?
Well, I'll start with the immediate attention. I think first and foremost, we've got to figure out how to get more people coming to the games. And this isn't anything new, you know, for the league. It's been something that we've grappled with since year one in 2001 of the league. We've got an incredible product on the field. How are we not delivering the message the right way to get people to see this amazing product, and we've got to figure that out. And that's not one person; that's a collective effort from everybody, you know, in the league. But it is something that we've got to address. This is too good of a game not to have more people coming. So, what is it in the fan experience that we are not delivering, and what's the messaging that we're not providing to get people out, you know? So I'd say that's, you know, our issue number one for the league. What I'm most proud of is really just everybody that's been involved in this league since day one. You know, the players have been, you know, true pioneers. The investors have given, you know, so much more than just writing checks. They've poured, you know, everything they have into trying to make their teams and the league successful. It's just an incredible group of people to be associated with, you know, for so many years. And it's been a pleasure and a privilege.
As you transition into a big time role at LAC Sports Network. What's an area that is most critical to raise the profile of that product? From what I've seen, it's the studio shows are good. The content's pretty good. How is just as simple as advertising, marketing, and trying to get more eyes there, and it'll grow, or is it something else?
Well, I think there's a lot of things, and you know, and the credit with LSN really goes to Rob Wallace, who's been running the day to day of that since launch. I think, you know, the most important thing is really figuring out what's the best platform, you know, for the network. You know, we have obviously we put a lot of games on LSN. LSN also put games last year on Twitter. It's taking a real hard look. What's the best platform? Where are we going to get the most eyeballs? How do we monetize and get reach for this? And those are conversations that we're having, and we're speaking with a lot of different, you know, potential partners for the network. These are exciting times in the OTT world. It's a little bit of a wild, wild west. And, you know, with what we've built, we've had a lot of people now come to us expressing interest in being involved with LSN, with what we're doing. So we just got to figure out what's the best for serving our fans. And that's what we're going to be pursuing.
Yeah, it's a rapidly changing TV broadcast platform world out there, as I know from ESPN, and that's got to be fascinating for you guys now to be out there, you know, the MLL and LAC Sportsnet trying to deal with that environment.
It's incredibly exciting, and you know, fortunately for us, some of the programming that we've built has been compelling. It's caught a lot of people's eyes in the industry of what we've done and the quality of what we're able to produce and bringing people into the state-of-the-art facilities that we've built up in Woburn has been very helpful. And, you know, the problem with this where it has is a bit of a wild, wild west is making sure that we make the right deal with a partner and not just grab something that's not going to be in the best interest of the network or the people that we're trying to serve.
Dave Gross, outgoing commissioner of Major League Lacrosse. Dave, thanks for the time.
Thank you so much.
# embrace the grind. We work for the fans. We work for the 71 Division I teams. # don't quit.